Good morning. This is Peter Meyerson, broadcasting for Radio Entrepreneurs at the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship at UMass in, I guess it's Fall River. I keep saying Dartmouth, but it's close enough. And for those in the audience who haven't been here, they should come down. It's quite a special place. And right now we have two guests, Jacob Valancourt and Staff Sheehan, who are the founders of Waste Hub, who are going to be talking about what they do. So, good morning, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So, one or the other of you, tell me, you know, what Waste Hub's about.
Sure. So, I'll start by creating a framework for the audience. Waste Hub was created because our true founder and CEO, Calvin Woolard, has a ton of industrial energy efficiency experience. He would go into factories and industrial processes, understand how much energy is going into that process, and help them do the same thing, but use significantly less energy. And he did that for at least 20 years before he fully had the idea of Waste Hub. And I think actually he at one point called it Waste Buyers, but we sort of pivoted the name. And what he saw as he was going in all of these places was a tremendous volume of physical materials that are being thrown away or incinerated, disposed of somehow in very conventional means. And the volumes are like 5 18-wheelers full of stuff every 12 hours. I mean, the volumes are just...
So lots of stuff that doesn't need to be disposed of,
yes,
or needs to be disposed of carefully.
Sure. Yes, most of it is non-hazardous, but it's homogeneous in many cases, and it's continuous, right? They're running 365 days a year, and they don't stop. Maybe they have a shutdown for a few hours or something, and they fix something and get back up. So this stuff is always coming out.
So these are large manufacturing facilities.
Very large manufacturing.
In any particular space?
All space.
Focus on manufacturing industry, though.
Okay.
So not right now we're focusing on that customer segment, not trying to go into places where we're too unfamiliar.
Okay.
Sure. And so there's the framework, right? There's all this material, and what was missing was a bit of science and engineering being applied to that. And so he created this business with me, and then staff joined us shortly after, and then Steve, our chief technology officer, about a year and a half after that. And what we do is we enter into a gain-sharing agreement. So these companies are paying to dispose of the material, right? Say it's $10 million a year. That's average.
To get rid of the material that's there, either excess or hazardous or whatever.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. Process waste.
Process waste.
And what we do is we establish a baseline. So say it's $10 million a year. Then we analyze the material, right? We get a period of time to work on this exclusively. No one else can do it except for us. It's usually 6 months, a year, sometimes it's a year and a half. It depends on the complexity of the material. But we understand what it is, and we figure out what it can become. And then, once we figure out what it can become, we look at what will create the greatest beneficial or environmental benefit and monetary benefit for all the stakeholders. That includes us, the manufacturers, and the potential customers. So in terms of, you know, we have options. We could go to energy, waste energy. That's at the bottom of the totem pole. We want to avoid that. We could create a raw material input for something else or their process, or we can turn it into something that can be sold as a product. And that is at the very top.
That's the top of the totem pole.
It takes the longest time, but it achieves the greatest benefit. And usually we're creating something that lasts for years and years, not a plastic fork or something that you use once and throw away. We're talking about taking something that was going to go in the landfill, and now we're going to keep it out of that landfill for a long time. And we usually try to create products that are recyclable. So at the end of their useful life, they can be recycled again at the end and again. That's what we're doing, is we're trying to create the circular economy. So that instead of going from a mine to your home to eventually a landfill, it's just a circle and never goes into that landfill. that's really what we're doing, and the way we do that is by innovating processes and sales and marketing, making sure that we can get this material sold or the products sold and to the end customers, and we take a percentage of what we save them. So if they're paying $10 million a year and now they're getting paid $30 million a year, we'll get a percentage of that. You know, that's $40 million in value that they're now receiving. We get a percentage of that, and for a long time, 10 years.
So sounds like a very hard job. I mean,
it certainly is. It's taken us 5 years to get to the point we're at, but we've quadrupled our revenues from last year to this year, and we're really doing well.
Yeah, no, but how could somebody who's a manufacturer not engage you? I mean, that's kind of my thought process. The trick to me, and you both can comment on it, is figuring out what the waste materials can be made into.
That's where we come in. That's where staff and Calvin and Steve really help. They're the creative problem solvers who conceived that. You know, they're really creative guys who are scientists and engineers, and they're phenomenal. And that's part of our secret sauce. They're really good at that.
Well, the place that we fit into in this industry is previously this job was taken care of by waste management consultants and people who would kind of go into a plant, look at a problem, write a report, and hand it to you. Now, the missing piece to that is having someone internal who can innovate based on the data in that report and then execute. And so what we did is we essentially created a company that not only does that consulting and auditing, but also does the innovation and the execution. And we are able to innovate because we have experience across a broad number of industries. And so we can see where a waste stream in one industry can be a feedstock in another. And so we have that leg up over people that are in internal R&D or internal innovation units. And then on the execution side, we have much higher incentive to execute very well because our clients could terminate a contract, and then we're, you know, out of luck if we miss a shipment, or if we don't make sure that the buses are running on time. And so really that's kind of the pain point in this industry that we address. It's not only the auditing and consulting, but the innovation and the execution on top of that.
But it's not only execution, if I'm hearing this correctly. It's you, in fact, can help them sell the product, or you, in fact, could sell the product yourselves.
Yep.
Did I hear that right?
Yeah. Jake's the one that takes care of selling the product, so you can address that.
When we are at that, closer to the top of that totem pole I talked about, triangle, what you're doing is we're installing equipment right in the factory. We're doing the processing that's necessary there. We conceive that whole design. We project manage it, get the equipment installed, process it, and then usually when it's that level of complexity, we're also selling it. So in that case, we're getting a higher percentage because the manufacturer just doesn't want to deal with it. It's not, you know, that say, for example, they're making flooring, and now we're making a plastic polymer that could never become flooring. They don't know that market. They're not interested in it. They don't want to. They just want to get paid. So they have us learn that market and sell it for them.
So do you take the product out of their facility, put it into your facility, or do they?
Usually we have just-in-time manufacturing.
So you use their facilities.
Yeah, we hope to be able to do that in the future, but we're currently raising funding to try to make that a reality, where we can then take direct possession of the material and derive more benefit for our company.
It's interesting. So it doesn't sound like there's a heck of a lot of competition. I mean, there's competition in terms of waste management consultants. I mean, I know there are a bunch of them out there.
Yes.
But there are very few. I don't think I have heard of people who actually go in and take the waste material and convert it.
Yeah, our business model really is addressing this problem that's in the waste management consulting industry. And so we're differentiating ourselves from that entire group by doing our scientific and engineering innovation and developing these new processes with the entirety of the manufacturing industry in mind, rather than just a small part of it.
Interesting. So how does the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship play into your story?
Well, they give us a place to tinker with materials and actually figure out and try to make it into something else. So they are our physical location, one of the physical locations where we can play with these materials and actually turn them into something that's useful for the world.
Yeah, central to our business model is that innovation part of it, you know, and being able to characterize waste streams thoroughly and find out what they're made of and what we can make them into. And so that's what we do here. That's what our the facilities here are very helpful for that. And they are also, you know, thanks to the people that work here, you know, they're something that a startup can manage and afford.
I mean, you're on some level. I mean, my practice is startups. You're past the startup, the initial startup phase. I mean, you're generating revenue. Am I right?
Yeah, we've been generating revenue for a few years.
We're a post-revenue startup. We're okay. Not pre-revenue.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But, you know, so...
We're still scaling the business, though, right? This will become a $100 million a year business in a few years.
It's hard to see how it won't.
It absolutely will. And we're at the beginning of that, right? We just... peaked over a million, and we'll exceed that before the end of the year. And last year we were, you know, less than that. So we've tremendously accelerated our growth rate. Essentially, once you have a couple of these solutions installed, we're past that point where we're creating consistent revenue, and the revenue grows because in each one that you install, and or even if you're not installing, you're just taking the material and selling it. Each one that we get is a consistent, solid, recurring revenue every month or every quarter. And as you add more projects, that revenue just grows and grows. And we haven't had to add more people to grow that revenue. So our costs haven't grown, but our revenue has. Now, eventually, of course, we are planning to add more people so we can go faster and do 10 projects at a time instead of 3 or 4.
So what's the next step?
Well, we're trying to complete our round of fundraising before the end of this year. So that would be a step. But if that doesn't happen, that's okay, because we have the revenue to grow anyways. We're planning to make some hires by the end of this year, early next year. That'll enable that growth. And we have a few...
Let me stop you there. Are you finding it hard to raise money? I mean, to me, this is a very compelling story.
No, we're not finding it hard to raise money. What we have struggled with is getting the initial investor... understands the story. It's their investors, right, in terms of a VC. They have trouble grasping it because they've never stepped foot in a factory. You tell them that there's 5 truckloads every 12 hours of this material and that it's a $10 million cost, they kind of look at you like you're nuts. They don't. It's not that they don't believe you, it's that they can't believe you because they've just never seen that. But if we get in a plane and we go fly over it and show you, you know, there's a landfill that's 10 by 5 miles right on the site there, they're going to have to build a new one in 2 years if we don't solve this, then they start to understand. So we're having success, but it takes time because it's just so different. The problem and the framework that the problem exists in is very different, right? Most of these investors are used to investing in a software application on a smartphone that can scale like wildfire, those sorts
or
of
tank.
Sexier items. Yeah, not... oh, you're coming up with process innovation that's going to turn my junk into cash? That's kind of odd.
I mean, my experience with the venture capitalists out there is you have a whole lot of different VCs who are interested in different areas. Mm-hmm. And maybe you need to find people. I mean, there are people who do engage in venture capital in different spaces. I mean, if you're going to a software guy, a venture capitalist, he's not going to understand this process.
Sure.
So I think you need to find somebody, I mean, this is gratuitous advice and worth exactly what you're paying for it, you know, but you know, this feels to me like a story that's so easy to tell.
Well,
I understand that it's easy to tell.
I think that to some extent you're hearing the story after many years of refining it.
Yes, it's taken a long time
so,
to figure out how to tell this story best. And when we initially started, we didn't have the same business model as we do now. We thought we would be an online marketplace. We only, in the past couple of years, figured out that that's just never going to happen the way that we expected it to. Yeah. And we've sort of pivoted and filled this niche, and now we're growing very quickly and accelerating. Now, I will add that there's a very good possibility, very strong chance that an actual customer, manufacturer of ours, will be our biggest and strongest investor. It's been quite clear that they are interested in this and they've had conversations. Of course, they warned us that they might just buy us entirely because we're starting to do too well for them, but that's sort of how they operate. You know, sort of like how drug companies will do that.
Yeah,
this is one particular manufacturer that's not a drug company, but has warned us that, hey, if you do too well, we're just going to buy you.
No. I mean, that's the logic. I mean, I was going to ask that question about, you know, customers actually stepping in and just buying. But they may not want to because they're going to want you to continue doing the innovation.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, they certainly do, but they I think they have the belief that if they buy us that we'll stay forever. And we don't want to stop doing this. We're, in a way, we are changing the world for the better. And the impact that we're having, to give you some concept, I think around every minute or so, we're diverting more than 2 tons of material. You know, we're in the billions of pounds that have been prevented from going to landfill incineration.
You're talking about your company.
Yes, our company is responsible for that. That's, you know, the equivalent of taking hundreds of thousands of cars off the road and CO2 emissions reduction. There's less landfill space being taken up. We're not burning things that are creating all kinds of bad emissions. It's having a big impact, and we're only 4 owners with, you know, a couple subcontractors and some employees. Imagine when this is a $100 million business and we've got, you know, 200 customers instead of 35. I mean, it's going to be a huge impact, and there are some investors that are even more interested in that impact than the financial impact.
That's fascinating. So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how would they do it?
I'd say go to our website, waste-hub.com.
Say it again.
Waste-hub, that's hotel-uniform-bravo.com. Okay. And there, you know, contact us. There's easiest way to get in touch with us right there. Send us an email. Everyone in the company gets that email, so somebody will respond as quick as we can. Or just pick up the phone and call us.
That's great. So this is Peter Meyerson of Radio Entrepreneurs, broadcasting from the Center for Innovation and Research. Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship at UMass in Fall River. And I have been talking to Jacob Valancourt and Staff Sheehan, who are the founders of Waste Hub, a fascinating new business. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.